From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A busy week on international trade relations was kicked off in Montreal, Canada, where representatives from the United States, Mexico, and Canada are meeting to discuss the state of the North America Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. As part of a major campaign promise, Donald Trump had vowed to renegotiate NAFTA in favor of American workers. Also this week, Trump announced tariffs on solar panels and washing machine imports to the U.S. in a move criticized by free trade proponents, even those in his own party. While the NAFTA discussions commence, the World Economic Forum is taking place in Davos, Switzerland, where heads of state, including Trump, are meeting to discuss global financial policy. Trump, who is expected to address the forum on Friday, tweeted ahead of his trip, quote, "We'll soon be heading to Davos, Switzerland to tell the world how great America is and is doing. Our economy is now booming, and with all I am doing, we'll only get better. Our country is finally winning again," he said. My guest is Karen Hansen-Kuhn. She is the Director of Trade and Global Governance at the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Hello.
So, Karen, let's first begin with the issue of the NAFTA negotiations. What exactly has been happening in Montreal? Is the entire sort of NAFTA document up for renegotiations, or are parts of it up? As Canada has been in particular fighting to preserve NAFTA as is, I understand.
Well, of course, it's impossible for us to know for sure because the negotiations are happening behind closed doors. But our understanding is that many parts of it are up for grabs. The Trump administration has announced certain changes they want to make, particularly on dispute settlement, government procurement, a few other things. We also believe there are elements coming in that haven't been talked about, elements from the failed Trans-Pacific Partnership. So we know certain things are on the table for this sixth negotiating round. But like I said, there is a lot that is still happening in secret.
Now, the tariffs that Trump announced on solar panels and washing machines, do you think that has anything to do with the way in which he's positioning himself as a sort of protectionist leader when it comes to trade policy, this happening the same week as the NAFTA negotiations?
Well, I think there's been a lot of posturing going on. That is certainly part of it. The timing of that response happening just before, just as the NAFTA round was getting going, the day before Trump headed off to Davos. I mean, certainly that was intended to send a certain signal. To be fair, Canada is doing the same. On Wednesday, Canada announced that it and the other countries involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership had concluded negotiations. They did this on the one-year anniversary of Trump withdrawing last year and say that they will sign it next year. So that was also some posturing that's happening. And the trip to Davos itself is posturing. I guess it's hard to know what all of this posturing really means. I certainly wouldn't presume to know what's in Trump's mind. But I do think it is, you know, beyond ironic that he is going to the forum that most promotes globalism, globalization, and free trade to say he's doing something different.
Right. It's going to be interesting. And I want to get to what might happen in Davos. But staying on NAFTA, he tweeted ahead on January 18th, so just a few days ago, right before the NAFTA discussions, he tweeted about the wall, the border wall with Mexico. He said the wall will be paid for directly or indirectly or through longer-term reimbursement by Mexico, which has a ridiculous $71 billion trade surplus with the U.S. The $20 billion wall is, quote, peanuts compared to what Mexico makes from the U.S. NAFTA is a bad joke. What do you make of this tweet?
Well, a lot of it's fantasy. Mexico will not pay for that wall, and they have said that repeatedly. And in any case, it's
a
ridiculous
idea. And he's conflating
idea.
NAFTA with the wall.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you're right. It's silly, because even if they were, there's no way they're going to get paid for the wall by NAFTA. In any case, what we hear from farm groups is they are petrified that all of this anti-immigrant sentiment will make it that much harder to get people to come work in the fields. It is a crazy idea. I have to say, I mean, when I think about NAFTA, and I do think about it quite a bit, certainly I follow Trump's tweets and what he says he's going to do. I think it's probably more important for us to stay focused on what we want, to say loud and clear over the next few months, as we have been saying, what actually needs to change in NAFTA. Now, I would say civil society groups throughout North America agree on the need for to open up the process. They agree on the need to raise wages and labor standards throughout North America. There's been a lot of talk about outsourcing. Well, outsourcing won't be stopped by raising tariffs. It will be stopped if we can raise wages throughout the hemisphere, throughout North America, so that Mexican wages are not falling the way they have been under NAFTA.
Right. I think you make a really important point, because NAFTA is a favored whipping boy of people like Trump as a way to make the case that American workers are losing. But what they fail to often mention is that Mexican workers in particular have lost probably the most of all three countries, right?
Oh, that's absolutely true. Real wages in Mexico have fallen by 9% since NAFTA began, and they were low to start with. Farmers, more than 2 million Mexican farmers have been driven off their lands by imports of cheap corn from the United States. So this has been devastating for Mexican farmers, but I think what many of us focus on is that it's not, you know, if Mexico lost doesn't mean the U.S. won. We've also had a huge decline in family farmers in the United States and a big increase in corporate concentration in agriculture.
So, and none of Trump's posturing on NAFTA actually addresses those real things, right? While, of course, many on the left have been critical of NAFTA, and Trump has been critical of NAFTA. He killed the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but for different reasons, right? I mean, the sort of nationalist tinged words that he uses to critique these free trade agreements don't address what really hurts ordinary American, Mexican, and Canadian workers.
That's absolutely right. And it would be a huge mistake to think that it is a debate between free traders and Trump. I mean, civil society groups for decades have been saying we need a different approach. We need a new NAFTA that is constructed along different lines. And we have to stay focused on that. You know, as I said, we need to focus on things like participation, on raising wages. We need to get rid of these this investor-state dispute settlement, this corporate tribunal that allows corporations to sue governments over public interest laws. We have some ideas about what should happen with farming as well. None of those are proposals that we think are likely to advance. But as I said, I think at this point, you know, we need to stay really focused on the things we do want. And I think there's a lot of consensus about that.
Is civil society at the table with these discussions on NAFTA? I was trying to reach out to someone from the AFL-CIO who was actually participating, apparently, in closed-door sessions. Labor and organized labor in particular, at least in theory, are critical to ensuring the rights of workers. So as far as you can tell, is there a strong component of civil society participation in the NAFTA talks?
Well, it depends how you classify it. There are people who are cleared advisors. They have gone through a whole process, security clearance, and some of those people can participate in meetings with negotiators, not in the talks directly. And they will go to jail if they say what's come out of those talks.
Wow.
And something like 90% of the 400 advisors are from corporations. Now, that said, civil society is in Montreal. There are a number of events taking place over the week of the negotiations, some of them public forums, teach-ins, demonstrations, all trying to get media attention and increase public awareness over these issues. So civil society is, you know, in some way they are at the table through those representatives from labor, environmental groups. I think what they can do is important. But it's not enough. And even they would say it's terribly limited.
So they're sort of trying to force their part in the conversation. So the heads of state of Canada, Mexico, and the U.S., neither of them are seem to at least be espousing the kinds of changes that NAFTA really does need, right?
Well, it doesn't seem like it. I do think that, I mean, there are some elements that have been positive. Canada has tabled the idea of an enforceable labor chapter, a chapter on environment, one on Indigenous peoples. We don't know exactly what's in that, but we think that's a good idea. Canada has also been resisting the U.S. attempt to dismantle its program for dairy supply management. They have a program in Canada that matches consumer demand with production, ensures farmers a fair price so they can stay on the land. In the U.S., it's a sort of free-for-all, and we've got overproduction, we've got very low prices, farmers going bankrupt, and they are being told that the solution to their problem is to open up those markets in Canada. Now, family farm groups like the National Family Farm Coalition, National Farmers Union, and others say ruining Canada's program won't solve the problems of American farmers. But I think we're encouraged so far anyway that Canada seems to be resisting that proposal. So I think it's up to us to keep pushing on these issues.
So,
I will say,
go
in terms of public officials, there was a letter that came out on Wednesday from 183 members of Congress pushing for stronger labor rights enforcement within NAFTA. So messages are getting out. It's just too early to tell yet how it'll turn out.
And this is one, as you said, this is not the first time these meetings are taking place. Was the fifth or sixth round of negotiations happening now?
It's the sixth round.
Sixth round. And some are saying this might be the definitive one, though. Is it likely that this could, whatever comes out of this, could be the definitive NAFTA rewrite, or might there be another one after this?
You know, I think a couple of weeks ago we were hearing people say this would be the one that would determine things, because there is anxiety about the Mexican presidential elections that are coming up in July. But I think what I've been hearing more and more is people acknowledging that they are not close to agreement. So there will be rounds that continue at least through March. And then after that, it's a little hard to tell with both Mexican and U.S. elections coming up.
Right. Enrique Peña Nieto has reached his term limit, and his party's strongest rival is Andrés Manuel López Obrador, a strongly progressive candidate who would want to change NAFTA, but in a different direction than Peña Nieto would want to. So that's an interesting sort of deadline for Mexico's participation. Let's talk about Davos. Donald Trump, as you and I are talking, has headed to Davos. He's there already in Switzerland, where the annual World Economic Forum meeting takes place. This sort of, you know, the hobnobbing of elites, world economic elites, to discuss how to have a unified policy on, you know, corporate neoliberal capitalism working as smoothly as possible. These are mostly free trade, so-called free trade proponents that are gathering there. And Donald Trump is expected to address the assembly on Friday. Some among our audience might be listening and watching this interview after that speech has taken place. But how do you expect Trump to be received in this space of free trade proponents where he has taken a different perspective?
Well, I think he won't be well received, and I think he probably doesn't care. I mean, I think to him, this is one more platform to get out his message and appear to be strong to his base, perhaps. But I think we're already hearing some pushback from the French president, from the German president, even in his meetings with the UK to try and smooth over relations. People are a little standoffish. I think there is a lot of people are questioning what this speech on Friday will be. I certainly don't know. But it is, you know, it is an odd place to be making his America First arguments.
Right. I mean, he's essentially tweeted right before leaving that he was going to make the case about making America great, and he's already been roasted in the European press for taking that stance. So it certainly remains to be seen. On our next episode, we will actually bring analysis of the speech on that Trump said he's going to be making on Friday. Well, I want to thank you so much, Karen, for joining us. Give out a website for your organization, the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy.
It's www.iatp.org.
We'll post a link to that from our site later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you.
Karen Hansen-Kuhn is the Director of Trade and Global Governance at the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. We've been discussing NAFTA and Davos and more. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.